Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
I'm Emily.
I'm Kate.
That's right. And today we're recording an episode with our wives talking about money.
That's right, man. This is our fifth annual. Is that what we're going to call this? We do this just about every year, and specifically we do it while we're at the beach. It's a way for us to not get too far behind in the episodes that we're creating. So we mix a little bit of work with pleasure, and we've got our wives here, Kate and Emily. And before we get to the questions, Yona, what do y'all think about this house that we're staying in? Because I'll go ahead and quick explainer. This is by far the nicest beach house that we've stayed in. And I would say that we've come a long way since some of the early beach days.
Man. Have we ever?
We have more than one bathroom for 11 people. So that is a win. No, this house is awesome. It has a pool, which is fantastic when you got 7 kids.
Yeah, I think...
Looks like Kate does not like it.
She's just pouting over there for some reason, but
Kate does like it because, well, it's got the dopest stove that we've ever cooked
on. True.
Have you ever cooked
the best
on
kitchen
a
to
Viking?
Cook in?
No. And now I will cook on nothing else.
Yeah. So
that's not good for your budget.
So we'll talk about it later.
You feel like it's worth it? The additional money for the additional luxury?
I think it was. I was thinking just this morning how Emily mentioned a house with just one bathroom, which we legitimately stayed at in Jacksonville Beach. There was one like outside, but then there was one inside. And so for all of us to share that bathroom,
it was literally like an outhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you were sweating when you were in there.
Uh-huh. So it was like splitting that house was kind of crazy, and it was We finally figured out the name spelled backwards. It was called Automat, and we were like, what does that mean? It was Automat. Tomato spelled backwards because they had tomato stuff all up in the kitchen.
We were sitting there playing games, and yeah, I looked up there and realized that, holy crap. It's like the scene in The Shining where the kid's saying red rum the whole time, and finally it clicks and we're all kind of horrified.
That's actually exactly how it went down.
Yes, right. I think we're sitting there playing Settlers of Catan. Probably. And we're like, that's why there's tomato paraphernalia.
Yeah, as the kids get older, it's like we need a little more space, and this is definitely an upgrade. But I think it's nice to go from like crummy slumming it, and it makes you appreciate the nicer thing a little bit more than if you just like upgrade all the time and everything's nice all the time. So I don't know. I have fond memories of that trip.
Yeah.
Even though I know like going number two was weird because there was one bathroom.
Everyone was there.
It was awkward.
I also want to just shout out that we have no kids in diapers for the first time on this vacation.
My gosh.
Everyone's swimming. Yes. I mean, the boys are in life vest, but they're swimming. And it is a game changer.
I feel more like an adult rather than a parent chasing a kid.
I've actually read a book, like maybe only a chapter, but that is the first in a lot of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so, it's definitely different vibes.
Here's my question or thought for y'all. Do y'all have any regrets about this house? Because I'll go ahead and say, I think I have been the one that has had the most... not cold feet, but when we were initially looking at some of the different properties, I was just like, oh my gosh, are we really going to spend... like literally, when you Kate sent it out as a joke, I was like, or we could get this one, ha ha ha. But then the more we looked at it, the more we thought, oh no, what if we got this? This would be amazing.
Zero regrets.
Kate should tell more jokes.
No regrets.
No regrets. Let's do it again next year. This is great.
Yep. I think this one is worth the money. It's an annual trip and... I don't know. It's even proximity to the beach, walking there, the pool, all that stuff.
Definitely got the value is there.
Yeah.
Right?
We couldn't go back to Audemars. Sure. That would be the worst.
Like it's worth the money. It's just, it always comes down to the individual. Like, is it worth the money to the person? Like, is it worth the money to us? Essentially.
Yes. So. It is.
Yeah, right. Seven kids. Like, I mean, there's seven kids in this house.
Year, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys still reached out and asked for a discount, didn't you?
Oh yeah, I think so. Well, I think we had initially booked it through Airbnb, and then this is a little trick, by the way.
Oh, right,
you see who lists it, and oftentimes it's a vacation rental company. And then we were like, wait a second, we're still in the cancellation window. Let's cancel this joker after we reach out to the vacation rental company, and it was like thousands of dollars less.
Oh yeah.
So literally, I was looking up the dates for next year. It's a more than $3,000 difference if you book through Airbnb versus booking directly.
Holy cow.
So when you're looking on Airbnb and you see a place, don't necessarily book right away. Maybe look and see if the owner or the vacation rental agency can give you a better price.
That's right. Okay, so let's go ahead and get into the questions before kids start making their way up here. Mm-hmm. After the movie runs out downstairs. I think we should probably start this episode off the way we start off our interviews, which is we always ask guests, and y'all know this, ladies, but we ask our guests what their craft beer equivalent is. Like, what is their splurge, the thing that they spend money on, that to a lot of folks is maybe a complete waste of money. So first of all, Suzanne, I think, she wanted to know if y'all like craft beer, but then secondly, like, what is something you actually splurge on? And specifically, she was wanting to know if we have a splurge budget. Do we set money aside for splurges for us individually? Kate, how about you kick it off?
Sure. I do like craft beer. We enjoy visiting breweries in different cities when we visit, and it's just sort of one thing we do when we travel, but it is not my craft beer. Does that make sense? I love craft beer, but it is not my craft beer. My craft beer equivalent, like money splurge, is probably plants.
Yeah, I can attest to that.
Plants inside and outside, and probably also art supplies. I buy so many art supplies for projects that are unnecessary but fun. So yeah, that's what mine would be.
That is something that you spend money on that I think most people would say, wait, you're spending how much on paper or things that you think should not cost a lot of money, but yeah.
Yeah, I also love craft beer, but yes, it's not my splurge. If I was going to splurge, man, in this season of life, I think two things. Books. I'm reading a lot of books and I love books. I'm willing to spend money on it, but also just convenience right now. Like, we're doing Instacart this week instead of having to go to the grocery store, and it is amazing. I wouldn't normally do that, but anything that kind of is convenient in this season, helps speeds things up or gives me more time, I am all about it.
Well, I'll say that I did go to the grocery store yesterday. So we might be doing some Instacart, but yeah.
That's true.
It's a mix. The aisles,
so. We tipped you, though. We tipped you for your
My splurge is spending Thanks, is right. sending Matt to the grocery store.
So we're going to get to more listener questions later on. There were a lot of thoughtful ones posted in the Facebook group. Can't wait to get to those. But real quick, I think we should talk about, like, this time last year, our beach trip last year, we were planning on moving, but we weren't sure if we were going to pull it off, especially our family. You guys were under contract or had already even closed, maybe, I guess, on a house. And we were like, maybe. And then quickly thereafter, we ended up going under contract on a place. We both moved a week apart from one another, moved to the burbs from the city. And it's been an interesting year. to say the least, for our families as we've adjusted to kind of a new way of life in a new place. So I'm just curious, Emily in particular, what has this past year taught you before we get into like the hardcore money stuff?
Oh, that's a big question. That's a fun question. I think it's taught me resilience and adaptability, and that it's important to look for the best and the good in people and situations, even when it's unfamiliar, and that you are out of control in life more than you think, but that that's not a bad thing.
Well, and I think partly what you're referring to, Emily, as well, like a tree came crashing through our roof. We were yes. we got rear-ended in a car accident. So we've been displaced out of our home for a couple
right,
of months.
Right.
So it's been for us even more than just moving to a new place, all those other things added in, right. which has made
we've gone through
summer
a lot
to summer
of change
crazy. Yeah.
And had to usher three kids through a lot of change.
Yeah.
And so I think that's just showed us a lot about ourselves and a lot about other people and how do you just make the best of it, even if it's not ideal. And how to be grateful for what things are, even if they're not familiar. I like control. I think I've said it before on this podcast. I really like control. And this has been a year in which I just haven't been in control, but that's been a good thing. I'm also grateful for where we've landed. You know, it's been good. It's just taught us a lot.
What specifically about the move? And so, I mean, I think you know this, but we recorded an entire episode maybe right after we moved or maybe right before talking about just the different reasons how to move and the different factors that we considered. But what about moving to our little burb just outside of Atlanta? What has made that, I guess, worth the move?
Yeah. Space, partly. I mean, we have a huge yard now. We have a driveway for the first time. It is hilarious how much our kids are like, it's a driveway. Yeah. We can play games.
Having a garage. Like,
honestly,
I know
great.
That I have made fun of garages in the past. I'm like, it's a house for your car.
Yeah.
And like, who's...
Who needs
so silly.
That?
But the utility that comes with having a garage, it's incredible. I mean, all of the... It's where you put all the things that you use outside, but you don't necessarily want to store them inside. I'm like, okay, I guess I've... kind of come around, you know, when it comes to garages, but
they're great.
All the things that were so where we moved, more space, like you said, but just being closer to nature. There's a certain degree of like the neighborhoods and the town encourage family life, essentially. Like there's a lot of things that make it, I think, easier. Sort of like you're saying, like you're talking about convenience, and it's certainly possible to raise a family in town.
Absolutely.
But I do think that, at least for us, like there was a mindset shift that when we moved out to the burbs, we sort of like when we talked about working out, like when we moved, it was easy for me to make this mental shift of like, oh, Matt is somebody who works out now. But that coincided with a move. So it was like this physical, tangible change that took place. And I think
it's like the fresh start effect that we talked about with Katie Milton.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think something is similar when it comes to sort of making some of these what feel like sacrifices at the time, right? Moving out of a city and having this, it's a change of mindset while there is still sort of an actual change in sort of the amenities or the restaurants or the festivals, you know, like it's a lot different taking our kids up to the square and going to a 4th of July parade than it is to take them to East Atlanta Village for the East Atlanta Strut. Right. Yeah. And we went to both of those through over the past 10 years or so. But I guess, Kate, like I'm curious if you have any regrets or anything you miss specifically from living out here in the burbs as opposed to living in town.
I don't think this is a regret, but I definitely miss the community that we had built over 15 years. I mean, those were old established relationships, and we're kind of jumping in the middle of a lot of old established relationships now and trying to find your way into a comfortable position in those people's worlds is a little bit hard. They've got rhythms. They've got people. They do this every 4th of July. They do that every Halloween. Like, we are having to figure out a lot of stuff sort of from the middle, it feels like. I'm glad we didn't do this 5 years from now. It would have been even harder.
Even harder.
Like we're trying to pull a Kramer, bust into Jerry's apartment, but Jerry's apartment is other people's lives. And that is, I agree. That's
that's been one of the
hardest. It's hard to be new. I mean, there's just a huge learning curve relationally.
Yeah,
and everyone has been so kind. I don't want to downplay that at all. Everyone's been so nice. It's just you're in a rhythm of doing certain things and you don't always think of that new family down the street, you know? So
it does make
it's a little hard for me. I'm not as bold of a person. And so I would kind of rather be invited than like go out and
What's up? Hey!
Show up at people's houses, but I've had to show up at some houses. Yeah. I mean, I really have like shown up at some people's houses where I didn't know if I was going to really know anybody, and I'm just going to see how it goes. Yeah. Socially, it can be hard.
Difficult,
and you kind of do it like for your kids. Like, you know, your kids need the friends too. So that's kind of given me confidence to to pour into those relationships and try to make them make the best.
Yeah. Well, the fact is we are closer to a Costco, so that does make things slightly more affordable as we've been able to fully embrace the Costco membership.
Like, we're not joking. Joel's really happy about that.
Bulk meats and all. I mean, I would, again, this is something else I made fun of, but now that we live closer, and literally there's a Costco closer to us than the Aldi by like 50 feet or something.
But
like,
that's why you got the Kirkland signature tattoo on your lower back.
Oh man, I love it.
You're all about it now.
I'm up.
Which I love.
Very much all about it.
All right. So I want to talk real quick too about, there was a listener question on a recent Ask HTM episode, and it was just so fun to hear from a listener who his girlfriend was in grad school to become a licensed therapist. And so he was like, has it like messed up your world as much as it's messed mine up? And so I gave my best reply to that, talking about how, yeah, it has messed it up, but in a lot of good ways too. So Leslie, she said, how did you know it was the right time to go back to school? And eventually the workforce, you're not in the workforce yet, you're still in school, but next year you're going to start interning. So we're on the precipice of that. And did the ages of your children play a big role? What's that kind of, it's been over 2 years now you've been in school. What's it been like for us?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, my favorite quote is when Joel looked at me after proofreading like my third paper and was like, you know, I never knew I had so many problems until you started grad school. But it's been
good. Ignorance was bliss.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely rocked our world. I think, again, you know, being new, going back to school, learning anything new, you know, kind of shows you who you are in a new light as you develop new skills. But I think especially this profession, which you're doing so much introspection and internal work. So yeah, it's changed us, and it's changed me, I think, for the better. I think it's helped me feel more steady and have a sense of identity and purpose and less anxiety. But I'm also specializing in couples and family. So we've talked a lot about our relationship and kind of learned to say, yeah, this is good, but we also long for more. So what does it look like to love each other well, and where do we actually need to grow? What are we not doing well? And that's just a rocky process, to be honest, and take a good look at yourself and your marriage and what you've created, and to call what's good, but to also push yourself to grow. So it's been really, really good work, but it's also been probably an intense, is maybe a good word, season for us, but good. And then I love the question, how did I decide to go back? Yes, my kids' ages had a lot to do with it. I went back when my youngest was one. So I had just finished nursing, and I knew that we were done with having children. And so I kind of felt some freedom to start thinking about what I wanted to do next. I also knew I generally just loved working and kind of loved the career I'd had before, and knew that I wanted to go back to school. And this is the direction I was probably going to go. But I didn't actually have courage to do it. It wasn't like my first choice to go back to school. I think the pandemic, in which it just took a lot out of our family, kind of gave me the courage to say, okay, I've given a lot to hold our kids together through school and a newborn. What do I want to do? And then I had another friend who was in her 50s who had just gone back to school for a counseling degree. And it was just such an encouragement to think, you know, like, I'm going to do this. There's never a perfect time, but this is what I've wanted to do. And I'm just going to jump off the deep end and do it. So
yeah, it's been a killer experience for you, but I think it's been good for our family. It's not always easy, right? As we're having deeper conversations, harder conversations at times, but it's also been really good, I think, for the kids to see you pursue something that you love and something that you're really good at. And I think it's helped you and I connect relationally, intellectually in different ways too. So it's, yeah, not always easy, like you said, but it's been good.
So quick follow-up then, and I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit as we've got some of these different questions, but has that changed the dynamic for y'all? So Emily, you're in school, you're reading a lot more, writing, you've got a lot of homework, that kind of stuff. Has that changed some of the different at-home roles? So this kind of alludes to Jess's question. She wanted to know, what do you think about the balance of financial contributions versus the domestic tasks or housework, like the mental load of managing a home? The labor is valuable. How do you divide it?
Oh man, that's such a great question, because you know, as a family, we definitely value the domestic part of it, even though you're not making money for it. But it's really shifted the dynamics, I think, majorly in our home, because I did, even though I was still working part-time, I worked from home. And some years I wasn't working at all, especially when I had newborns. And I took on like a very large share of the domestic tasks, and you just kind of were out of, you know, you went and worked and did your thing there. So I think we
still took out the garbage and stuff, but yeah, was definitely doing far less.
Yeah. And so we've really had to shift. Yeah. Who does what? And I think, you know, it's not even always this conversation where we had it intentionally on the outset and lived it out. It was just kind of more, you know, maybe things were falling apart or certain chores weren't getting done and I was overwhelmed, and we just had to sit down and be like, okay, here's a problem. How do we fix it? Who does it make sense to do what? Okay. So I actually need you to step up more here, and I need to step up more here. And then this is just going to have to go by the wayside. So it's definitely shifted it for sure. We have a lot more conversations about how to divide it, which is tricky being in school, because I don't feel like I can yet justify, you know, I'm just spending a lot of money in grad school and not making any yet. And so that's been tricky for me to kind of have to justify taking the grace to need the space and need the help.
It takes more communication too, I think, for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although your six-figure salary, I know it's coming, and that's the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, keep wishing.
And I think we've also been less afraid to hire out a few tasks. Mowing the lawn, I used to mow the lawn all the time. I don't mow the lawn anymore. We hired somebody to do that. Same with a once a month house cleaning. Like that's something. Those are kind of non-negotiables at this point, so that we have the freedom to just enjoy our lives a little bit more and enjoy our downtime, as opposed to always doing chores. But also, I think allows us more time for your schoolwork and for hanging out with kids, family time, stuff like that.
And shout out to extended family. I mean, that's another reason we did move to the burbs. We're near family, and we have a lot of family help. Which really you cannot put a value on.
Yeah.
It's priceless.
True.
So.
We'll go down that path just yet. But, Kate, I'm curious, because you're not in grad school. What are your thoughts on, basically, you are primarily a mom. You're primarily a homemaker. What are your thoughts, between the balance of, obviously, the many different roles that women can have?
Yeah, I am at home. I feel like right now my role at home is something I'm really thankful for. It's been a huge year of transition for us, and being home and kind of being flexible and available in all the ways has been great for the transition for our family. I think being a stay-at-home mom can be such a wonderful, noble, life-giving thing. I think it can also be the opposite of that. And so I feel like I kind of do the best I can to maintain my identity in that. And I think that's what makes it sustainable for me right now. Like
finding the balance between you as an individual versus the role that you're playing.
Yeah, I think it could take over and I could just disappear into the work of it. And I think finding within stay-at-home mom the things that are part of who I am at my core, like doing art alongside my kids or working in the art and landscaping while they're out there. You know, I enjoy cooking. So even like finding myself a little bit in that, I'm just kind of doing the stay-at-home mom thing my own way. It does not look like Instagram. Does not look like the people around us, even sometimes it feels like. But it's my own version of it, and it's the way that it's sustainable for me, is that I think it's important for our kids to see our own identity, whether or not that's in your career or just in the things that you love and the things you do around them and prioritize. And so, yeah, I think I'm just finding my version of it right now.
Totally. Yeah, I really like that. I really like thinking through what is it that we're communicating specifically with you being the primary parent at home throughout the day and carpool and all that. But everything we do communicates something to our kids. And I think it's worth thinking through, what are we teaching them through this? What are we teaching them by saying no in this case? Or what are we teaching them by saying yes in this other way?
Or just the way they see their mom living their life. Like our house might be messy, but I'm doing some, making something beautiful or whatever I'm doing. I've got three girls who may go straight into the workforce or maybe a stay at home mom. And I just want them to know that whichever direction they go,
all are awesome.
Their personal identity is going to be a big part of their family culture. And so you can exhibit that in a number of different ways.
Totally. Yeah. I wanted to bring that up because I think it's awesome that y'all, Emily, you and Kate are very different, and at least at this snapshot, at this point in time. I almost wish that Joel was a stay-at-home dad and like I was the one that worked or something like that to be able to provide some of the variety, because I think the variety and seeing that there's a lot of folks out there doing different things, but you can still do it well, live a great life and do well from a financial standpoint as well, that all of that's possible. It may not look exactly like you said, like some folks' lifestyle on Instagram. You may not be able to afford every single thing that you want. There are going to be sacrifices often if you only have a single partner that's working, but that doesn't mean it's not possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So you mentioned money there. We've got some more money questions lined up from listeners. We'll get to a bunch of those. We'll get to that right after this.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
All right, we are back and we're going to kind of dive more into, we've been talking more about like life and living, which I think is a good thing, but we certainly want to make sure that we're tackling some of the specific money questions that listeners had. And so let's get straight to it. Jessica, she said, what's one budgeting or money saving idea that you had to talk your husband out of, or vice versa? I guess something maybe that you had to talk us into, or vice versa. What's something that we had to talk you out of?
Yeah, that's how I read it.
Which way do you think she's asking it?
I don't know, but I read it. Do I have to talk you out of stuff or do you have to talk me out of stuff? And generally, Matt has to talk me out of stuff. I think
of spending money or talk you out of different ways to save money.
Well, that's what I was trying to think through, because it's sometimes financially related, but it's oftentimes just like something big and giant that our family doesn't need to take on.
Like a expense or financial responsibility?
Like a farm.
Like a farm.
In the backyard.
Okay. Yeah. Like, do we need to fence in our entire front yard so I can grow like corn and okra without the deer eating it? Like, maybe I have a whole spreadsheet about that. Maybe I do. And maybe Matt said no. But
I
it's
say
fair.
No.
No, he would never say no. But it was a long conversation about like what makes the most sense for us to do.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that.
So you're saying then that I am talking you out of spending money.
Yes, but I don't think it really comes down to money. I think it just comes down to like, that just isn't practical. That just, like, you dreamed about it and thought about it for too long one day, and okay, it got too big, and it's too much to ask of our family. Like, financially part of it, but also just farming.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, Emily, is there something that Joel's like, I feel like maybe this one, this question might be geared more towards well, Joel, because Joel is like the ultra frugal, yes, borderline cheap when it comes to the different hoops that he's willing to make his family jump through, specifically you.
I am sitting here. I want you to know that.
This question immediately made me think, in all seriousness, when we were pregnant with our first child, Joel was like, your mom's a neonatal nurse practitioner. She can do this at home, right? Like, we don't need to go to the hospital. We can save a lot of money.
Free childbirth.
If your mom just comes in and helps you have a baby. That's just
that's just using my noggin.
That is not how this works. You know, in general, Joel is an idea machine for sure. I think there are a million ideas, money-saving ideas that go through his head every day, and he verbally processes most of them.
I was going to say, you don't even hear all of them.
I know.
Okay? There's some lying dormant in here. They're coming later.
That's the scary thing. And I think my usual, what do I have to, you know, I don't talk him in or out of it. I think I more just ask reflective questions, typically, which is, how much time is that going to take?
Like, and a real counselor. Don't provide them the answer. Let him discover the answer on his own.
Let's reflect. Do you have time for this? You know, I'm thinking of this recent.
He's like a Jedi now at this point.
He doesn't even know.
This is not the Rivian you're looking for, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, I'm generally up for it. Like, he's great at saving money and being frugal and getting creative. I just kind of know my boundaries. Like, we have a limited amount of time and I have a limited amount of patience. Can it fit within that? If so, great, go for it. You know, like, he wanted a phone upgrade and like bought an iPhone to trade it in for an Android that was cheaper. And I don't even know, but I was like,
literally bought one on Facebook Marketplace. I talked about that because Google had such a good trade in and I did it. But I know you were a little skeptical.
Yeah. But I was like, look, I need a new phone. Like, can you make this happen? And can you do this quickly? And so I think that's more how we talk about it, because there's a lot of ideas that fly through our house.
Yeah.
Have y'all, was there a recent fight? Because the next question, this one is from JJ. What's the largest monetary decision that you and your spouse disagreed on, and how did it resolve? So basically they're looking for the dirt. What's
No, we got a lot of dirt.
Other than the pregnancy, the first pregnancy, which, by the way, having had to pay cash out of pocket, we were literally talking through different ways we could have a baby on the cheap.
You should have hired Emily's mom is what you should have done.
You probably should have.
She's a neonatal nurse, dude. Haven't you heard?
My mom was like, no way will I ever deliver your child.
Like, aside from some of the smaller things, was there a big one where y'all were at odds?
Yeah, you know, Kate and I were even talking about this. Such a great question. And yes, we're definitely at odds. To be honest, I feel like the bigger things are easy to agree on, like how we're going to invest money or the ways we want to save, or do we renovate or buy a house, or are those big things we've been on the same page? It's the small things that I think we get tripped up on. Like, do our kids need a new backpack every school year? You know, I want them to get one. And Joel's like, no, they don't need one out of principle.
The old one works just fine.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's this.
Plus tells those other kids to get off my lawn.
It's the smaller things that I think kind of trip us up at times that we tend to get stuck on.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think it's a mental blockade for me that leads to those discussions oftentimes. And usually it's something I just have to get over and be like, yeah, you're right. Like,
well, and I think that's pretty common. I mean, life really is made up of small moments rather than the large ones, which is true financially. It's all the small decisions you're continually making that could be tricky.
They add up for sure.
Kate, does one come to mind as far as disagreement that we had? We are in perfect harmony and
yes,
we are in unison when it comes perfect to how it harmony is we spend. Oh, except for the fence.
The fence.
Except for the farm in the backyard.
Well, the farm.
Can you cage match inside of that okra growing fence is my question.
So you brought that up, and literally that probably is one of the bigger disagreements that we've had. And not unlike Emily, it comes down to, I think, asking some of those questions, and it's not just addressing the fence. It's like, you ask the questions to get to what's underneath that, but kind of asking those questions, figuring out what's practical. And honestly, I think figuring out like what the trade-offs are going to be, because it's like, okay, we can decide that like, this is something that we prioritize, but what does this mean for us? Not just now, but what does this mean for us, for instance, down the road? Mm-hmm. If we keep dumping, that's negative connotation. I won't say dumping. If we keep spending money on our current home, what does that mean for our ability to potentially move to a home that has a room for each one of our kids, which might be nice in a couple of years, that kind of thing. I think those are the sort of concessions that you make when you buy things now, and it comes down to asking some of those questions, trying to figure out what is it that you ultimately want, right?
Yeah, I mean, really, the disagreement was not a financial one. The disagreement was an emotional one, where like I had pictured this whole thing, and it was going to be beautiful and wonderful, and the finances of it didn't make sense, and the brass tacks of it didn't make sense. But emotionally, I was really excited about it. And so having a super practical conversation about something I'm like kind of emotionally swept up in is just a kind of recipe for disaster, is sort of how I see it. So I don't really know how better we could have resolved it. Like, we just had to keep talking about it, and I had to kind of like come down off my mountain a little bit. But it was, it was just an emotional thing. And I feel like a lot of our conversations with finances, we are able to keep the emotion out of the conversations because things are pretty labeled and numbered at our house. And this was just not. And so it did show us why it is so helpful for us to have most things in little boxes. Hmm. Because this one thing wasn't in a box, and it was like a big conversation.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, basically what we're talking about is budgeting. And so at the beginning of this year, we sat down and we decided, okay, how much money are we going to spend this year on the house? And not only how much money, but what specifically is that money going to go towards? Like, what projects? And like you said, this was new and not included on that. And it doesn't mean we're not necessarily going to consider it in the future. But for this year, it's like, okay, we're kind of at our limit. We're tapped out regarding how much money we just proactively decided that we're going to spend this year. So, I mean, we're talking basically about sticking to a budget, not necessarily, I'm not a dream killer. like, that's not my intention. The intention is to say, like a trainer would, right? Like a physical coach, like a coach or any kind of coach. It's like, hey, this is something that we said was important to us, that we said, this is what we're going to do. Can we do that? You know, is this something that we can push off to next year? And maybe, you know what, boom, that thing like rises to the top of the pile for next year. And it's something that we knock out at the very beginning. But
Okra Garden 2024. That's what I'm talking about.
That's the real campaign that everyone wants to see.
Which I would love to say, I wish you could see the Altmix front yard on a budget. They've done a beautiful job. Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Kate, they should do a lot with a little, for sure.
Yeah, it looks so good because they are intentional and planned it out, and
thank you,
are good at executing every bit of that.
And they shop like pros.
So one for the dang deer.
The deer did.
Except for the deer. Do any listeners have advice on deer?
Oh,
that's what
gosh,
we need.
Oh,
we've done all the things. Kate's just like, okay, I'm not going to start asking you to pee into this pitcher and then go out there and creating an invisible boundary.
But we're close.
But maybe I'm going to.
You're going to create a predator boundary.
I think a bazooka is one possible, but you might have run into other troubles if you do that.
Yeah. HOA or whatever.
Yeah, they're
not down with that. All right, let's talk about younger us for a second. Man, the good old days, right? No, these are the good old days right now. But Kathy wants to know, how do you adjust to handling finances together after you get married? And you guys are coming up on your 15th wedding anniversary, sorry? Or 16th?
16.
Oh, you just had 15. Mm-hmm. And we're coming up on our 13th. So, getting married, adjusting finances as you come together. Any
what you got,
takeaways for that?
Well, I came to our marriage with no money and no job. So we had to really quickly figure out how we were going to feed two people and pay for our bills and everything on one.
A very small minimum wage salary.
Graphic designer salary.
Mm-hmm. Which in some ways I'll say is good.
Absolutely.
Right?
It was
like
really good.
And like on one hand, it sounds really intimidating, but it's also, man, is it easier to do that when you don't have habits or bad habits or poor spending patterns ingrained where you're trying to hit reset on those things? Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of folks are finding themselves as single individuals where they're working for maybe a decade, earning a pretty good salary, where they're able to do whatever it is that they want with their money, taking that to a relationship, trying to figure out what to do. That was more kind of y'all's situation.
A little bit. It's I think that you're right. The older you get, the more you are self-reliant, the harder it is to combine and then to merge everything together. We were still relatively young, making relatively little, and so it made it easier, I think, in a lot of ways for us to just be like, all right, we're putting it all in one pot and we're doing this together. But I do see how it's a different thing if you're getting married in your mid to late 30s or 40s, something like that, and you're like, I've got my own stuff, I've got my own way of living, I've got my own budget, like, and I don't necessarily, I love you and want to live together, but I don't necessarily want everything to be under one roof money wise. I think I get where people are coming from on that.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I think for us, we didn't, because we weren't in that scenario, we went to a weekend Dave Ramsey seminar.
We did.
And got some basic budget tips from that. And
well, that's all. Yeah. At the time, as far as I knew, he was the only guy out there talking about personal finances. And yeah. I'd run across him and I thought, all right, just from a general not getting into debt or at least getting out of debt. And we were in a fortunate position.
And look at you now. Now you're like the better version of Dave Ramsey, Matthew.
Yes, yeah, so I don't at all regret having found my way into the personal finance space via Dave Ramsey.
No, and I think it was a great foundation for
us. He does
a
lot of amazing stuff for a lot of people, specifically getting out of debt. But beyond that, obviously we take a more nuanced approach.
Some questionable tactics after that.
Sure.
Yeah, even then, I think there were things that we weren't totally on board with. We never did like cash and envelope situation because Matt was always about like credit card perks.
The points.
So we were doing that way back then. Oh, so, but we had a budget from early on how we were going to live and eat. And I learned really quick how to cook. We never ate out. Like it was a like trial by fire way of learning to budget and live together and not have any money all at once.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we learned together was the fortunate position we found ourselves in.
Yep.
What I would say about combining finances is that I feel like we're still learning because I think it's different in every season as you have more money or less money or children and it changes things. And what I would say to anyone who's starting out combining finances is self-awareness is so helpful because money, there's just so much value we place on money that we're sometimes not even aware of. You know, what did it represent to you as a kid? Did you have it? Did you not have it? How did your parents spend it? When you see your partner spend it in a way differently, what emotions does that bring up? Does it make you happy or scared? Like, I just think self-awareness of knowing what money represents and what you want to do with your money is so important. And just to remember that while the end goal is important, the process of how you get there as a couple really like seals the deal. And so how do you learn to talk to each other? How do you learn to listen to your partner with their financial concerns? Can you have empathy and understand? And can you talk out the importance? And it's just a slow process. We're still doing it. I mean, you don't arrive, I think, at the smooth joined finances ever, you know, even if you're wealthy. So just learning how to process well and hear your partner and know yourself, I think is super important.
Yeah,
I don't want anyone to think that there's like something you figure out when you first get married and then you're like set.
You're set. Yeah, no, exactly. It is a problem. Well, like we said,
unravels a lot.
We're still fighting, not fighting, but having disagreements over whether it's how much money we're going to spend on the yard, how much we're going to spend on kids' backpacks, these types of things. And I think what's at the center of that is communication. Ainsley asks or says, discuss financial communication with your spouse. How involved is she in the daily, monthly, yearly finances? And she goes on, if something happened to you, would she easily be able to pay bills, access accounts, understand the investments? Do you discuss financial goals, both long-term and short-term? Does she know your asset allocations? How often, do y'all talk about these types of things? Aside, so far we've talked about, I guess, situations that arise because of life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, kids are going back to school. What does that look like as far as getting a backpack? But are y'all proactively talking about things? Like if you went to a marriage and finances conference, they might say, talk about these types of things. How often are y'all doing that?
That's a good question. I think this made me think a couple of things. It made me think, one, I need to probably create something to where if something happened to me, you have all of the account logins, passwords, and here's where all the accounts is. And
this was a humbling question because for the past 6 months, I've been like, you know, if you die, there's like a half of our money. I'm not going to know where it is or what to do with it. Like we've literally been talking about
my
this.
Death frequently.
That's like, great. Now they asked, they're all going to know.
Life insurance policy. I know. It's kept coming up.
Which, like how much is that for again? And so I will say this, like we have all of the proper, like we have life insurance, right? We have enough where I would feel
and
if
I know
I passed.
Some of that,
yeah. You know, some of that. But I'm also like, I need to do do a better job and really accumulate everything in one place for you.
Yeah, partly because you do take over most of the finances. I mean, I'm not in it. But I will say I know every investment that you are in. I mean, we discuss every investment or rental properties or whatever that looks like.
You don't know about the gold that Joel has buried in different locations in the backyard?
Oh, she knows.
I mean, I know where that is, but
right.
I thought you also should know, Emily. No?
Okay. All right, I'll be watching your life insurance policy too. Yeah, so I think it's, they're more casual conversations. This is where I actually love that we have, because all mixes do it different than the large guards. This is great to have two different perspectives. I feel like we don't necessarily
I also need that document.
I mean, yeah, unfortunately, like, it's in a similar way. Like, I think you correct me if, I'll let you talk.
This is homework.
You say it, Kate.
Homework, by the way, for the two of us.
Do you know where everything is?
I know where all of our accounts, I know the document that all of our account information is on, all of our password information is on. And so I was thinking through after I read this question, like, what would I do in this situation? And I think I could just go through that document probably and get to everywhere I needed to get. And I do know where our investments are. I'm pretty sure I know where all of the investment money goes, but, it would be good to have that document for sure.
Yeah.
Like the ABC.
It exists, but we just haven't, I guess when we talk about it. So like she was asking about like the, you know, she was essentially asking about the regularity and like from a daily expending kind of standpoint, I feel like every week, ideally like 3 times a month, that kind of thing, I update you and I'm like, all right, this is like in a perfect month, I guess.
I was going to say, I think I get updated about once a month. where we are in our grocery budget.
Our spending,
I feel like that's the first update that I get.
Because that's one that you have
because I do our day-to-day spending.
Exactly.
I buy all of the things that we need for the kids and all of the groceries, mm-hmm. and then you pay all the bills, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So that's our breakdown.
Yeah. But then at the end of the month, I always like review with you. I'm like, hey, this is kind of where we ended up. This is how much we went over. This is how much under we were. I'll do like a net worth update, that kind of thing. So I guess it's always verbal though. Like we never sit down and I don't like show you the spreadsheets. So
I mean,
we talk
I can
about
access it if I wanted to.
And it's there.
Yeah. But it's really complicated, y'all.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It's very complicated.
So
Matt doesn't do anything halfway.
Maybe.
No. Oh my goodness.
Some folks call it like the oh crap folder or something like that. But basically if something were to happen, something that literally lists it all out, how much is in each account, how to access, what it's for.
Mm-hmm. Which is so wise.
Legit good homework.
It's really smart.
And we will all be doing it now when we get back from
Yes, thank you, Nancy.
Yes, thank you,
Nancy.
We
do a whole episode on this after we get our crap together.
Yeah,
you know?
After y'all write those up.
Yeah.
Yeah, the exactly. folder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got to have some of those other things in place, like life insurance and you know where the money's at and know the rental properties we have and you know where our money's at, invested, Vanguard, Fidelity, right? No shock to anybody who listens to the show, but it's important to have all that outlined and documented so that it's easy because you leave behind a lot of turmoil if you leave this mortal coil, right? And so you have to make sure that your significant other is prepared. But let's talk about goal setting. Anna, she wants to know, how do y'all decide how much to save each year as a couple? How do you navigate which fun and or big purchases to put that money towards?
We have a annual budget meeting and review everything from the previous year, set goals, not just financial goals, but also lifestyle goals for the next year that meeting. So, but because our income is variable, we don't know going into that meeting if there's going to be a surplus, what is the surplus going to be? So
and this has always been the case.
This has always been our
thing. Pretty much since the very beginning, we've never had a set income for the year. So we prioritize and we know that, hey, we want to make sure that we're at least.
But we even discuss like, oh, I think we're going to spend a little more on grocery this year. So that's going to take our monthly budget for grocery a little bit higher. But we also set goals for travel and lifestyle. We are naturally frugal. And so we have pushed ourselves to spend a little more on fun things like kids activities or extracurriculars for them or a trip for our family. So we've had to push ourselves on those goals a little bit, but because we talked about them in the beginning of the year, that money goes in, a certain amount goes in monthly, and by the time that arrives, it's not a big hit. So we do a lot of goal setting at our house.
Like those are the savings buckets or the sinking funds. But what's interesting though is like what you literally are talking about, ways for us to spend our money, which is a shift because, I mean, originally when we first got married, it was more about how much can we set aside and invest? And whatever it is that you measure, you're going to see that improve. And so what we found was that over time, especially as our kids have gotten older, that we needed to take a more intentional step, not in how much we were saving and investing, because we were doing a very good job of that, because that is very quantifiable. But what we weren't doing is finding ways to prioritize lifestyle, which is what the word you kept saying there. Like it comes back to, what are the different experiences? What do we want our kids to be exposed to? What, by the time they leave our house, what kind of things do we want to have done? So it's kind of, essentially, like almost like planning backwards to a, mm-hmm. to a certain extent. And that didn't necessarily come natural. So for us, it's been over the past 2 or 3 years, it's thinking through what do we want to do as a family together. And we've been fortunate enough to still be able to save and invest a ton for the future, not having to worry about that while starting to loosen the ratchet a little bit when it comes to spending and giving ourselves permission to spend in some of those ways that are important to us.
Yeah. That's like lifestyle optimization really yeah. coming to the forefront, which yeah. is mm-hmm. even comes down to how we schedule our work weeks and what that looks like. And yep. are we working too much? Are we taking enough breaks? Or in the overall 52-week spectrum, but also in the 5-day-a-week spectrum, do both of those look the way we want them to look? And money plays a part in that, in some of those discussions, right? Mm-hmm. Because
for sure.
you can work more and you can yep. dial up the income. You know, you can work as much as you want and really try to ratchet that up, or you can say, wait, that's probably not the thing I want to optimize for the most anymore, and there are other more important things that I want to achieve or ways I want my life to look more balanced. But Em, do you have any thoughts on that question about big purchases, where we like to allocate money?
So this is feels like a trickier question because we don't have black and white goals. Honestly, I think we've kind of just had goals we've agreed on in general, which is we've wanted to have an emergency fund. We wanted to have enough cash flow to not feel stress. And then there are things I think we committed to at the time, like school. We know, you know, school was worth it. And that was a goal that we're putting things aside for.
Your school, grad school.
Yeah, my school. Sorry, okay. My grad school, particularly.
Not flight school for your 8-year-old.
Right, exactly. And I think in general, we have similarities that help. Like we love to travel. We like vacation. That's pretty easy for us to spend on that. We're frugal when it comes to maybe clothes or shopping. So that's easier as well. I think when it comes to goals and being on the same page, for us, a number and a budget doesn't always settle the conversation, probably because we tend to be a bit more emotional, or I definitely am more emotional. And so the meaning behind it is usually something I always have to talk through. So if something comes up or pops up that you want or that I want, I think it's a conversation about, its value and what it means. And do we have the money? Does it stress other things? Is it okay? Is it worth it?
Or even if we have the money, is that something that we value to put the money towards?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And we wrestle with that internally, individually, but also mm-hmm. together as a couple.
Yeah. It's hard to talk about it or hard to know how to share because it's actually not super black and white.
Yeah.
And it's just more about the conversation and the moment and the season of life.
Well, I think too, that's where getting the big things right means you don't have to stress about the small stuff as well. We do think mm-hmm. about it in terms of like, does it align with our values, but not necessarily mm-hmm. like, oh, can we afford to buy plane tickets to Scotland? And is how expensive? Can we really afford this trip? Mm-hmm. We don't have to ask that question because we have one car, it's older, blah, 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 whatever. Mm-hmm. We've purposely kept our mortgage, far below what most people would say you can afford, right? And I think when you do that, then those smaller things, like we have a large enough cushion where we can be like, yeah, let's pounce on that. That sounds like fun. We have a big, almost like an opportunity fund is how I think of it. And when opportunity comes along, we can pounce at something really cool if you and I both agree and we think it's worth it. So I think of that as kind of like a fun approach to money, as opposed we're less rigid in our budgeting like you guys.
Sure. But I think that's a part of what Anna, I mean, is asking, like, how, because you said if you agree, mm-hmm. right? And so I think mm-hmm. that's really what she's getting at. How do you decide mm-hmm. if you agree? Because on one hand, you might say, yeah, heck yeah, I want to go to Scotland. And I do too. Like that sounds like a lot of fun. But Emily might be like, well, I don't really sound like something I want to do. So I guess I'm going to, maybe Anna isn't asking this, but I'm going to dig further. Like, how do you decide if you disagree?
Yeah.
If you value it differently. Yeah. What if you value it differently?
I think if we kept butting heads over something and I said, listen, travel's really important to me. And she says, it's not to me. We would probably diverge in some ways, and I might say, cool, well then I'm gonna find a way to pull this off with a buddy or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or if you said, listen, this other thing over here is really important to me, and I said, I don't value that, that's okay for partners to value different things, but you just have to make sure that both get equal access to be able to pursue those things they love. Matt, I noticed you haven't been crafting nearly as much as Kate on this trip. You don't care about it as much, the same as you, but you appreciate, I think, her craftiness, and sure, you don't mind her splurging in that way. I think the same would be true of us. Like, we do share a lot in common. We have a lot of things, but, or even something you're willing to go to a concert with me, maybe, let's say, that you don't care about as much. And you're like, it's worth it because I want to do that with you, even though that's not necessarily the thing I would choose to do.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
That's true. I mean, this is such a great question because I think this is at the heart of so much conflict about money, is we just value different things. And I think what we're saying is there are different ways to settle that. And I think there are times when it really is a budget. Like, you just need $300 to spend every month that maybe the other person just doesn't have an opinion on. Yeah. And it might be considered luxury to them, but necessity to you. And that's how you decide that. And I think there's actually seasons in our marriage when we've done that, especially when we were newly married and money was tighter. And I mean, we really started out with like nothing. That was actually more of a way we handled it. I think now, as we've like learned each other a little even more intuitively and we understand the values more, like, it's sometimes just more conversation. This is important to me. Can we make room for this? Can we not make room for this? But I think it's a lot of conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And self-awareness.
So, okay. So I'm going to jump real quick then, because Lauren, she basically had a question that was right in line with it. It's like, she was essentially asking about luxury spending. I'm not going to read her whole question, but she was like, manicures, massages, different things like this that your partner or your spouse might think is a total waste of money. How do you justify that? And what you said is, right, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head, which I think is kind of having like a splurge account, some sort of fund that gets funded, like you said, Joel, that gets equal access, but you're just not going to agree necessarily that that should be how the other person spends money, but you should respect them enough to say, well, I love you, and even though I don't care for those things, you should have the freedom and feel totally not guilty to be able to pursue those things. Do y'all think that that's the answer, is to have, obviously it can't be something that's like illegal, like there aren't illicit things that are taking place that this person is buying where it's secretive and unhealthy in that way, but when it comes to what it is that you value, do you think that that's a good solution?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's great. We have separate categories that get funded every month, and we do not, for the most part, discuss any of those purchases before we make them.
Yeah. So,
because some of those purchases are like, it's weird. It's weird stuff that I bought, and I just wanted to try out. And Matt does.
Check
we
out
don't
new
need
hot
to talk about it.
Mod Podge formula.
Yeah, it's waterproof. Can you believe it? It is.
Literally. Okay. I'm excited because a perfect example is literally Mod Podge and you painting with the kids. What are they? Like oysters? And while you're doing that, I get up early and I go and work out at the local CrossFit gym and pay $20 for one workout.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about either one of these things.
Which is exactly, like, you're not necessarily in agreement that that's a wise use of my money and vice versa. But we also have enough respect and love each other enough. And we know that that fuels something, like, that's good for us in different ways. And
yeah,
I just wanted
and
to mention
I,
that.
Yes, and I think it sounds exhausting to talk through all those little things. So if it is below a certain amount, like, I just, it comes out of this category that's just labeled Kate, and I just send, when I send over the numbers monthly to Matt, I just say, this comes out of Kate, this comes out of Matt.
Yeah. It's like, it's on a card that you keep up
it's
with.
It's on a card.
Because that
I
way,
pay.
If you need to make a return or if it's not something, like, I don't see
we
those.
We don't discuss returns.
We don't talk about them.
It's none
a,
of that.
These are day to day expenses. And at the end of the month, or as we're getting close to the end of the month, you just send me how much of that payment that you made to that card that then gets deducted from your splurge account. So,
yes.
We don't call it a splurge account. We just call them like personal accounts. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a Kate account, and these aren't actual separate accounts, they're just buckets.
They're buckets within an account, and that's where, like, if I get my hair done, that's where it comes out, or if I buy clothes for the kids,
or if I get them. I'm the one that got a massage recently.
Got a massage.
I got a 30
recently.
Minute massage. I didn't tell you that.
No, you didn't.
While I was visiting my folks,
that's something I want more to do more of.
Massages.
I love getting a massage, but I do it like once a year, sadly.
That's nice.
It's something I need to increase in my life.
So, just can the therapist in me say one thing?
Oh, yeah.
So, I think
do we
that
have
is
to pay for this.
I think that's a great solution. I've actually, just thinking of other practical solutions, I've heard couples who they're in charge of certain categories, like one's grocery, one's home care, and if you save money, whatever money you save budgeted, that goes into your personal account. So it's like motivation.
I like the incentive.
Yeah, there's incentive then to actually earn money within your own budget. So I think there's a lot of creative ways to do it. Again, I just want to emphasize, though, there's not necessarily a right way. I think it really is about the process. If you are fighting over the value of things, I think you got to sit down and talk about what it means to you and how you're going to solve the solution. Now, what that looks like, these are great practical ideas on what that looks like. And like, yeah, the conversation may be exhausting for some. It's not exhausting for us, you know? So I think it just really depends on how you're built. But I think knowing your partner and knowing what you value and having some practical ideas like this, you know, then you can make your own recipe for what that needs to look like.
That's right. All right. I feel like we're going a little bit long, but we do have a few more questions we want to get to from listeners. Specifically, we're going to talk about like food, favorite meals, favorite stores. We'll get to all of those right after this. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch. They make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
All right, we're back. We're still having a conversation at the beach about money and lots of other things with our better halves today on the show. And this is just one of the best episodes to record every single year. And I hope listeners enjoy it as much as we do getting to actually have this conversation. But let's make this more of a lightning round. We've got some questions that maybe don't involve quite as much
introspection,
therapy, Emily.
Emily's just like, think about it longer. Says the lady who charges by the hour.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Just come back next week. We'll fix it by then, I'm sure. But let's go to one from Jen. She wants to know, what are your absolute go-to meals that make all members of your household happy?
Kate's the food wizard. She should answer every food question. She is a food genius.
Our kids love fried rice, which is a combination of rice and all of our leftovers. So that's always a win. They also love when Matt cooks salmon.
Oh, so crispy salmon on the griddle.
Daddy's salmon is always a hit. Or if you smoke any kind of meat, they love that too.
So,
which we turn into like tacos or have with, you know, mac and cheese and broccoli or something. Yeah. Everybody likes all those meals. Yep. I get weird sometimes and I push my family to eat weird things, but those are all favorites. Easy current favorites.
And I'll also say our kids tend to be very adventurous eaters. I think of a lot of folks listening are like, salmon? Your kids like crispy? Like, what does that even mean?
And they like the skin on the back, crispy.
So the trick is we get the big fresh filet from Aldi, never been frozen, and you get that griddle, take it outside because it's going to smell. You get it screaming hot, put the hot oil on there and salt the skin, put it skin side down and let it just go. And that skin gets all crispy. It's like a potato chip.
So, also, Matt pitched it to them like potato chips. And so that's what they think it tastes like. And that's part of why they love it.
That's the winner.
Now you're starting to sound like our buddy Frankie from Struggle Meals over there, just giving recipes on the podcast.
Frankie Salenza.
Yeah. All right. And what's that? Okay. The meal our kids love is probably to our ever loving shame. It's this spaghetti that it's this recipe from my grandma. And
the white spaghetti.
It's brown.
It's like a radioactive orange look, right? Is what I would say. That's how I classify it. And it's not nice, but it's made from canned soups and stuff like that, but our kids love it. They love it. And so I grew up eating it. My kids are going to
just want to make note that I don't eat it.
Yeah. I'm having a salad tonight. Yes.
But when I'm in class or gone, that's what you cook for them, and they love that. Chicken pot pie. I have a very simple chicken pot pie recipe. I make a lot.
Totally.
We eat that a lot.
They love that too. Yeah.
Nice.
I am not a food wizard. Actually, pretty much all I know I've learned from Kate. I'm like, Kate, what are you making for dinner? Tell me how to make it. That's what we're having tonight. Right.
Oh, they love mac and cheese too. You make great mac and cheese.
We eat a lot of
mac and cheese goes with everything, right?
Yeah, so. Kate taught me that one too.
All right, Nina has a couple of questions. She says, what's your favorite store to shop and where do you get your haircut? How much would you pay for one?
You know, one of the number one perks about moving to the burbs is affordable haircuts. I go to the same place Joel's mom goes to. And now Kate goes too because she can cut and color hair for under $100. So which is insane.
Under 100.
Is it? No.
No, I think it's like 120.
Okay, 120. Okay. Maybe when I just get it cut,
maybe it's cheaper for
just
you.
Color.
I mean, you're talking like full. That's true. Oh, snap. Oh, yeah. Are you getting you're probably getting the Cheryl hookup. Yeah.
Well, it's so cheap.
Doesn't matter. In town, you're paying 4 to 5 times more.
Oh, yeah. It's so easily. Cheap that we told our friends in the city who now travel out to the burbs to get their hair cut at Lisa's. Shout out to Lisa. Thank
Lisa.
You.
Lisa.
Yes.
We're not going to share her number because we don't want to see her rates go up. We want her to be paid competitively what she's worth.
Kind of like your dentist.
Yeah.
I edited that out so that.
Oh, did you?
I didn't want it to sound like I was disparaging his office, that kind of thing. So
Springs come out of the chairs and all.
Exactly. Okay. But so real quick, lightning round. You have a favorite store? She was asking about favorite shop, favorite store.
I shop a lot of secondhand stores. Yeah, a lot of thrift stores, a lot of antique stores. Most of my clothes are from the thrift store, and I do not hesitate to tell people all the time that's where I got my clothes. I
love it.
But I just love seeing people's old stuff. I think it's so interesting. I really don't like going to stores and spending a whole lot of money on... I'll do that maybe a couple times a year. I'll buy like a new dress or a pair of nice jeans. But I will say the last nice dress and jeans I got were at a Goodwill near my house.
Boom.
People in the burbs are just putting stuff in the thrift store with tags on them.
There's tags on them.
Emily, you hitting up the thrift store, getting the good stuff, getting the goods?
Kate is also a thrift store wizard, so she comes home with all kinds of good finds.
Kate's just a wizard.
She is a wizard. She's got a lot of skills.
Guys, that's what we're getting to. The bottom line is, I'm a wizard.
The big reveal.
Okay, so stores, you know, I'm going to be honest, I'm not a huge shopper, so I think
would you say that Joel does more of the shopping for your household?
Down,
than you
Joel
do?
Does
I
more of the shopping.
I love going to the grocery store. It is one
also
of my
something
and
that
clothes
we can
shopping.
Cheryl with.
Yes,
yeah.
She
my mom
that love of shopping down to you.
If I call my mom, I guarantee you she's either at home, just got home from a shopping trip, or she's at the store shopping. So like I inherited this gene, and I tried to downplay it because my mom loves shopping.
So oftentimes I'll be like, Joel, I want these kind of shoes. They're kind of expensive. Here's a picture of them. You know, can you find them? And Joel. Like, I honestly think you buy all my shoes. Like, I cannot think of the last time I actually went shopping for shoes because you find them all.
I love that you set
the
parameters.
Yeah, this is what I want. Go find it. And he does. I feel more like...
I'm like a dog. Go chase him for a bone.
Joel's helped me find shoes too.
That's his... He's a shoe wizard.
I could be a personal shopper. This might be a side hustle.
You really could.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm more tend to like when I'm out, like I think of a family trip, I was out shopping with your mom and we ran into this little boutique and I bought like four things, which I usually don't do. But now like I've worn those four things all summer.
Yeah.
Like I tend to buy things that I like that I will just wear a lot that
in spurts.
Yeah. In spurts. Generally. Sorry. I wish I was more helpful with specifics. But
that's all good. Target probably is another go-to if it's like, eh, where else are we going?
It's just quick. I mean, it's just easy. You can get everything in one stop there.
And I love Costco, but I refuse to wear any clothing item from Costco. Sorry guys, like it's just
I have so a pair far. Of sandals I love from Costco.
Okay,
really?
Yeah, yes. But most of the clothing, like it's just sorry, it's just for
don't quite do it for the not tall quite. Skinny Norwegian. Yeah,
it doesn't fit me.
I have
well.
A budding sense of style. Let's keep moving. Dan basically asked, like him and his wife, they're thinking about having kids soon. They're trying to find that balance between saving a ton of money now, like saving and investing and getting ahead with their finances, versus thinking, oh, we're about to have kids, we should splurge a little bit, go on trips. How do you think he should approach that whole, that dichotomy essentially? Emily, you have any thoughts as a mother of three?
I think it's just, it's both. You know, I think it's easy to think of your life as before and after with kids, but it's not true. Like they're not the end all of everything. And so I would say like, are there smaller trips that you could take that allow you still to save some, but also to go on a trip? Mm-hmm. And it's just all or nothing, especially when you think about throwing in kids to the mix, just isn't, I would just think more broadly, I guess, is what I'm saying. So take the small trips, make the memories, because it's so true. Yes. You don't get that time back without kids. But you also need to save some for kids as well.
Yeah. The power of compounding returns. Like when I look back, I do not regret having saved and invested as aggressively as we did because of the options that it now affords us now. Yeah. I mean,
true, do you agree? But that being said, we went on some pretty epic trips.
Right. Mm-hmm. That you don't regret either.
Kids
that are huge. I mean, we still talk about those trips. Yeah. I think those were foundational.
We did it. We tried to do them on a dime, and like whether it was a baby moon kind of trip, where it's like we're staying within the state, but we're going somewhere cool that we haven't explored yet, and we're getting like one of the cheapest per night places we can find, and we're driving, which means no airfare, all that kind of stuff. Or we're getting
a lot of ways you can cut the costs.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about our 13th anniversary trip is going to be to New York City and Southwest points, like for the win to book both flights, right? So those are the kind of things where I think there's ways to do it, ways to skin the cat without like foregoing, not maxing out the Roth or something because you're like, let's have more experiences before the baby comes, or like I think you really can do both. For sure.
Like, and you should probably think more with that mindset. Like, you're not going to do one all the way, and you're not going to do the other one all the way. But the true answer is probably somewhere in the middle. But where exactly you're going to fall in the middle comes down to like Dan and his wife and what's important to them.
And it helps you think creatively. I mean, black and white thinking and either or thinking just like snuffs out creativity. Mm-hmm. So get creative.
And balance. I mean,
but
like just going into having kids with your relationship in a balanced place where you guys are both feeling good relationally. Like if you have done nothing but save money and sit at home and then you have kids, like one of you could potentially be resentful in that scenario.
Sure.
And if all you've done is travel and you go into having a kid with no money, that could be really stressful for one person in that scenario. Just, so
it depends on the couple.
I really think that the balance and the health of the relationship, whatever it looks like for you guys to build health in your relationship before you have kids. If that's travel, great. If it's not, that's okay. Just because everyone else baby means doesn't mean you have to. Mm-hmm. Like whatever you need to do to feel on the same page as your partner is the right thing to do.
Yeah. I think sometimes I think money is the answer to everything. Like we think that it, from a political perspective too, right? It's like, oh, funnel more money into the schools. That'll make them better. And it doesn't always pan out like that. And in fact, that's the opposite of true so much of the time.
Yeah.
And so if we can do it thoughtfully, spend the money thoughtfully, then I think it can go a long way. And then we have enough, hopefully, to invest and prepare for that future kid as well. But
yeah, I would say maybe do fully fund an emergency fund.
Oh yeah. Oh,
if you're totally. Make sure that that's funded before.
Yeah, we're not advocating for YOLO, spend all the money you've got now in order to get the memories in. Cause like,
definitely
again,
don't do it if you're going into debt, right?
But no.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely not. And I mean, babies can end up costing a lot as we have personally found out. So having that emergency fund there is good. It doesn't mean you save every cent, but it does mean that you have that cushion behind you.
Totally. Okay, on the kiddo note, Susan says, how do you decide how much detail to share with your children about your finances? Kate, you want to start this one off?
Sure. I mean, we talk about money a lot with our kids. It's small, casual conversations. It's not hard numbers like this. How much the house cost? You know, they're going to ask that. But we're not going to answer it.
They do ask that. The older they get, they do. Curious.
But you could tell them $100 and they'd be like, whoa. Yeah. So we don't talk about the numbers as much on big things like that, but they are handling money at the ages that they are, and they have little amounts of money to their name. And so we are running through scenarios with them as they decide to spend it or not spend it. And I think just small casual conversations that aren't loaded with emotion is a great way to introduce them to money in a, like, I guess a balanced, easy way that isn't, loaded with a lot of meaning or weight behind those conversations. And they overhear us have conversations too. Like if we're comparing gutter cleaning quotes, like they're listening to us talk through the pros and cons of the different options and what they're going to do. And they're listening to us have conversations that are also not loaded with emotion and sometimes do have a little piece of that where they hear us disagree. So I think all that to say, like, they're part of the ongoing conversation of money in our house. It's not like pervasive, but it comes up a couple times a week and they hear it, and or they're part of it, or they ask questions. So I just want them to not feel like it's this totally separate thing from life where they like handle all of this in a
some
secrecy
sort of
or
bubble
something.
Or something.
Yeah. Like it's part of everything we decide mm-hmm. to do.
Yeah. I think totally. At least me growing up, the conversations were typically fraught around money. There's a lot of emotion, and it was also like, you're not supposed to hear it. And so when I heard it, it was super emotional, and that wasn't necessarily the best thing for the way for a kid to get initiated into money convo. So yeah, taking the emotion out of it, but also making it normal every day, I think is really important. Where like Evie was telling me, your oldest was telling me today, like she made $7 for doing something to your rug or something.
She fixed our rug. We got braided tassels on our rug, and the little robot vacuum keeps unbraiding them. And so I stupidly was like, you can have $1 for every one of those that you fix. And then she fixed 7 of them. I was like, okay, well, yeah. It's kind of a lot, but all right.
That's great. I would say the emotion I do try to instill around money is just gratitude. I think when kids grow up used to a certain standard of living, you can lose perspective that it's actually a gift, and that not everyone else has the same privilege or can think about money the same. So I think like this beach house, like we've talked about how nice it is. We're like, isn't this great? We're thankful for the pool and we're fortunate, and like,
maybe
this is
some
a privilege.
Folks are still a little uncomfortable with it. So I don't know.
You know, so I think, which I actually do agree, I think learning about it unemotionally has been, is great. But I do try to foster the sense of gratitude and a little bit of perspective, you know, because as Americans, we're wealthy and, you know, living, it's been interesting even moving from the city to the burbs, the way you see money spent is different. And to having those kind of conversations just on perspective and how other people might feel about money or view money. Those are things I think kids inherit from us too.
Yeah. And fending off a sense of entitlement is
absolutely
not terribly easy. And it's like a constant task, right? To help your kids understand and feel that sense of contentment and thankfulness, gratitude. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's definitely something we work on a lot at the dinner table and other times too. It's like, yeah, let's be thankful for this thing because it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even if it's not some sort of splurge that, you know, broke the bank or anything like that, this is a big deal for our family to spend money in this way. And we're going to like really appreciate it and be thankful for it.
Yeah. And we're just going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. No, I do think that is good to not divorce emotions from it completely, because then it doesn't feel real, right? Because then you're just crunching numbers like AI or something like that. You're just like computing data, and that's not what we are. We're not just computers, right? Like we're individuals that have feelings, that do get to enjoy things. And so keeping that in perspective and keeping it within sort of a healthy framework is really helpful.
But, I agree, Matt.
Yeah. True.
But okay, so last question. The Kate and Emily show. Rihanna asks, if Kate and Emily, if they had their own bestie podcast, what would be the topic? What do y'all think y'all would talk about if Joel and
weird things.
The weirdest, most disjointed. Emily and I have
like
to write
Ripley's
things down
Believe It or Not,
to remember
or
to
what?
Talk to each other about it.
Yeah. He was like, oh, I got to mention this to Kate. I can't forget it.
Weird,
I know,
but
I
true.
Write it down. Sometimes when I come over, I like pull out my phone to the notes section. I'm like, I got some questions 100%. Over this last week.
Guess what happened?
That's what it would be, us going through our notes on our phone.
Just talk about crazy stuff from the past week.
A lot of random. Yeah, but I think parenting in general. I mean, I feel like what we talk about the most is like relational dynamics within our family, within our community. It's like between our families. It's just interesting. Mm-hmm. Talk a lot about parenting and like relationships. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just information. I mean, I love the way Kate thinks creatively, and I love to hear about her farm and her garden and all thrift store. You know, I just appreciate a friend. I just feel like we just talk about weird,
really weird
information on weird things, and that would occupy our time. Yeah. It would be not cohesive.
And that's why we don't have a podcast.
That's why we are not the podcaster.
No, guys, what's the overarching theme, though?
We don't have an overarching theme.
Weird things.
This is totally going to usurp Joe Rogan. I think we need to start this immediately.
These conversations are quite meandering as well.
Yeah. Or embarrassing things we've done. That would also.
Oh, there's so many.
There's a lot of that. Like, oh, I cannot believe the interaction I just had.
Yes, but I just said
on
out
accident.
Loud at school.
We could just call the podcast Awkward Moments with Emily and Kate.
Kate and I could totally fill that up.
We could fill an hour.
Yeah. Easily.
Yeah. We'll make sure to let everybody know what
definitely
y'all
not because we're weird, because our kids are weird.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yes. Well, okay. We've gone long, but let's quickly share the beer that we drink, that we shared today was Madame Rose, or Rosé? No, I guess Madame Rose. This is a Belgian-style wild ale by Goose Island Beer Company. Ladies, what were your thoughts? Ooh, Emily, you didn't even drink yours.
You know, this isn't my style of beer. I like it. It's really good. It's a good.
I see three empty glasses and one.
I drink about half of it. It's
more for me.
That's true.
Well, now I'm embarrassed. Is it a sour beer?
It's a sour.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, okay.
It's definitely sour.
Yeah, yeah. So that's just not my jam. And it's got a lot of vinegar.
Mm-hmm. You're an IPA gal.
Yeah, I would drink an IPA all day long. A sour is not my jam, but it's good. Like, I can appreciate the craft and quality, but I'm just not gonna put that back.
Yeah. This one had cherries in it, and this one is from 2017. So this had like... So
that might be why I had more in your mind, like more vinegar notes.
Yeah.
It's oxidized a little bit, but I mean, that being said, there was still a lot of body. There's still a lot of sweetness.
Yeah, it is. And that's probably why I like it more. I like the sweet too, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was...
I'm not the one who likes to drink pickle juice. I'm not pointing fingers.
So, Kate, on that note, you probably love this beer.
I did. You know, we used to make a drink at home where we would mix apple cider vinegar and fresh cranberry juice together, and I would add it to my water to flavor it. And honestly, this is pretty reminiscent of that.
Yeah. I get it. Well, okay, so
like our podcast would be full of Kate's recipes.
Stuff
like, so it was that Miss Bragg's or something like that, apple cider vinegar with the mother.
Why
would you do that again? Was that like a gut health thing?
Yeah. Also, I just really love vinegar. I mean, I am the one Emily's referring
literally
to.
Literally, she drinks pickle juice. Let's be clear.
Only good pickle juice. Not the kind with food coloring in it.
Yeah, I forget that.
Just obviously.
It burns your gut naturally.
Yeah, yeah. Promotes gut health.
Yeah, I
Joel,
think that's what that
did
is.
You dig it?
Oh, man, it's right up my alley. It was Flanders Red Vibes, which is one of my favorite beer styles out of Belgium. Cherries gave the nice little sweet and the fruity notes along with the oak. I mean, this thing.
It's aged in wine barrels as well, so it had, I think that's where some of the oak came from, some of that depth.
This was hitting all the notes for me, for sure.
Definitely glad we got to enjoy this one. Glad you picked this one up. And that's going to be it again. If you are still listening, we appreciate you listening to the fifth Wives episode. It's been a lot of fun, ladies. We are thankful
we'll start
for
making
y'all.
This biannual, we'll see.
Do it twice a year.
Back
Emily?
By popular demand.
Just take me to the beach twice a year. Take me here. I'm ready. Sign me up.
What we need to do.
Plus, we're gonna have to promote your new podcast. So
true.
Yeah.
All right, ladies.
Weird things.
Thank y'all for coming on the podcast today.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
And I'm guessing we probably won't have any show notes up. I guess we will, but I don't know what we'll link to. But you can find those up on the website at howtomoney.com. And Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast.
For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.